Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for True Crime News. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning.
Yeah.
It is Thursday, and this is the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are live here in the Kia Studios. Mike, Bo, Tiff hanging out with you. Why are you looking at me?
I think everybody's wondering the same thing, Tiff.
Did you Peloton,
did you Peloton this morning?
Actually, I didn't, but I got good news this morning.
Uh-oh.
Well, I am sore. I actually physically, I've been doing two workouts a day,
there
so I did not do it this morning. I have a leg day this afternoon.
Is that the good news?
But you're asking because I seem... like
you just look like you rode the Peloton. You've got the Peloton glow.
Peloton cold shower. No, that was not the recipe this morning.
Mm.
But I'm getting a special delivery.
Uh-oh.
So.
Is it from America?
Dude, I was going to ask if it was from France. I was like, yeah, is anything French made?
Is my mood that volatile?
No.
Do you want to say
I would say volatile's not the word I would use.
Volatile's probably a good word.
I was going to use obvious.
No, I got a lot of sleep last night again. And I have some connections that I made in France. And there's a product that I like. They only have it over there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be shipped. It's already being shipped my way.
There you go.
That makes me feel happy.
It does make a person feel chipper.
You know?
Not everybody's the same. Different things make different people happy. You do you, boo.
Whoa. Big pause. I coming up in Mic'd Up today, I'm going to tell you guys what I did yesterday. The first part of it is, though, we went and took pictures with Santa. It is, I'm Scrooge, but it's probably my least favorite day of the year. Like, absolute least favorite day of the year to go take pictures.
Wait, where'd you, like, what mall? Or was it a mall?
Well, I'm not going to say where it was because some things didn't go our way.
Okay.
So I'm not going to smash them. But it was, yeah, it was not, it's just, dude, it's just stressful.
So are
it's
they crying, kids crying, or the
they
Santa wasn't pleasant?
They're terrified. You have to, you know, the wife wants them in certain pajamas, and just the whole freaking thing is just brutal.
Can I say...
I'm sure you're going to tell me what I should have told the kids.
Yes.
No, I'm not. I'm going to pre-sympathize with you.
Yeah.
I love my wife to death.
Yes.
And she is very
holiday oriented.
Sentimental around the holidays.
No. She just like a picture has to be made of everything.
Yes.
And I am already.
Well, yeah, she's pregnant over Christmas. Of course,
but
she wants.
No.
He's talking about when the baby comes.
I'm telling you something, Tiffany. This was way pre-pregnancy. Like everything we do has a photo shoot.
My pitch just got very defensive for her.
In some point of it. And by the way,
ding.
I am doing my best to be patient with, you know, like little hormonal things, like, you know, like stuff that normal things that happen when people, because I don't get it, but I understand that there's a lot going on physically. But everything turns into a photo shoot. So I am already somewhat dreading. And it's, for me, it's one of the things where, like, nope, just one, because If you got two of them, that's when it really turns into man-to-man, and I'm a zone coverage corner.
And Tiff, and you'll like this part of it. This is what stressed me out probably the most, and I don't want to give all of it away, but we had to take the dog. Like, my wife was adamant that the dog was part of the Christmas photo, and I'm like,
was he not having
just
it?
Pleat. Actually, he was really good. You know, a little bit of CBD and the old chicken nuggets never hurt any dog.
No,
but he was really good. Now, the people working the photo booth at said place, there was one person that was not happy that there was a dog there. Although there's a sign that says "dogs welcome," and so yeah, it was. Woo! I'm glad it's over with. Let's just put it that way.
So you still gave them your business?
Well, you know what's funny is we got the photos. They weren't what you wanted, and I made some changes that my wife is going to like this morning when she wakes up. So I'll tell you all about that mic'd up, but that's for later on.
Okay. All right. Well, this hour is brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured? Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Can't wait to hear what happened at the Santa photo shoot.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Falcons and Vikings this weekend, Kirk Cousins' former team. But what happened last week against the Los Angeles Chargers? Well, Kirk Cousins, 4-interception game. He talked about trying to just do too much.
You know, trying to make something happen, you know, is can sometimes get you in trouble. And I think that happened certainly on Sunday. And you got to let the game come to you and let the plays happen as they present themselves. And so that's important. And I think I learned that again, as I have many times, you know, was reminded of that again on Sunday. And so that's just part of playing, is being able to discern, you know, when to make those tight window throws, when not to, and when to throw an opportunity ball and when not to. And it's never perfect, but you certainly try to make it as good as you can.
Did you catch the opportunity ball? Opportunity ball.
Because I think he threw
a word.
I think he threw. Well, do you think the interception was an opportunity ball, or the one in the end zone?
The one in the end zone. I don't know. If it wasn't an opportunity ball, I don't know what it was.
But I've went back and watched that play a few times, and I keep hearing people say, and I've listened to, and I've read stuff that's, you know, and people, oh, it should have had Bijan right in front of him. I don't even think that was the play. I thought that the one time I think that you could use maybe the tight end, I thought that would have been the opportunity ball there. Just throw it up, and if anyone can high point it, the 6'6 guy could. I don't know. Like you and I have went back and rewatched the game, and I still, it's a bad thing when I don't know what to say. Like when I can't think of anything to say.
Wow.
It means I'm stumped with what we saw.
This only happens once.
Yeah. Blue moon.
Yeah.
What you're trying to say is the only person that had an opportunity at that ball was about three of the Chargers standing in the end zone, that any three of them could have caught that. But no, I mean, I think that, look, Kirk's always fair, right? He's always fair in the way he assesses his own play. He knows it was bad. It's not like he's out there blaming receivers or blaming coaches or blaming concepts. He's just simply, hey, I got to be more calculated and make, what do you say, tight window throws and opportunity balls. And that's, sincerely, if you are rooting for Kirk Cousins, that's all you can ask of him right now. Now, the guys from Dukes and Bell did a good job kind of asking about where Kirk's at, asking about, you know, Michael Penix and a couple of other things yesterday that we'll listen to coming up. But just as far as Kirk's, you know, mindset, he sounds like he's doing his best at this point, given what happened on Sunday.
And it sounds, not that he never sounded sincere before, but you can kind of just hear it in his voice. If I'm just going off of that, just the disappointment from Sunday and how, yeah, if anyone knows that they need to correct some things, it's him.
Yeah, I know that for most of us, we don't get to go back and watch our work days on film, but we try to relive like when something went wrong, right? If you were in a sales meeting and you maybe flubbed a presentation or something, right? Or like for me, like yesterday we did an interview and I didn't like one of my questions. And I was like, man, that sucked. And you can go back and listen and hear it. It has got to be cringe when you go back and watch film and you just were horrible.
You watched clips on TV of yourself on TV.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure he's sitting in the room and he's seeing the all 22 of like what's actually happening and what he did. And you're like,
gotta feel brutal. Oh,
and imagine watching that in front of teammates. Like, Mike, what is that like? What is it like when you screw up so bad and you go back and have to watch it with others.
Tell you something. In college, Saban does Good, Bad, and the Ugly. And it's like when it's bad, he's cussing you out. And when it's ugly, he doesn't even say anything. But obviously wants to highlight the good. Yeah. So I think my senior year, we were playing LSU, and I gave up a safety on a sack. I think Nevis was the guy's name, the defensive tackle. I got just completely swam moved and gave up a sack, and the guy sacked Greg McElroy in the end zone. And the entire crowd is like looking at me like, what? And Saban put the tape on in the film room after we won the game, thankfully. Saban puts the tape on, doesn't say anything. And I'm like, oh, my God, I want to crawl under this desk. I want to dig a hole through the concrete floor and jump in the hole and put the carpet back over where I was just sitting. Like, there is no worse feeling than being around your teammates who you know blood, sweat, and tears for years to get to these points in these games. Thank goodness we won. Kirk obviously cannot say the same things this weekend watching film.
Probably made you guys stronger.
In the end, it does, Tiff. Right? In the end, it's called accountability.
It is. When we come back here on the morning shift, well, the head coach, Raheem Morris, he joined our Dukes and Bell. You're not going to want to miss this. That's next on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the morning shift, and the Falcons coming off of a three-game slide now after their most recent loss to the Los Angeles Chargers on Sunday. So when you look at those last three losses, Kirk Cousins, zero touchdowns, six interceptions. Now, Coach Raheem Morris, he joined Dukes and Bell, and Carl straight up, can I call him Carl on this show? I just call him Dukes. Dukes straight up asked him what's going on.
Duke, obviously, he didn't play well last week. You can't hide that fact. I don't think we do. I think we come out right away. I think he said it. I know he said it. He said it right after the game. I said it right after the game. And it's just like, you know, those things happen when you play tough games and you have tough losses and you throw four interceptions. It should be hard to win a football game. You know, I was more proud of the fact that the guys gave us a chance to be in the football game in the first place, because that could have got ugly. You know, when you do things like that, you throw pick sixes and you throw four interceptions and it doesn't go your way. But I got a lot of confidence in our quarterback as well, right? I got a lot of confidence that he can bounce back and he'll be ready to go. He's had tough games before. He's had tough stretches before. We've been in that spot, and he's been in that spot. And I'm very confident that he'll be able to bounce out of it and come out of it and get us back. We're going where he needs to go, right? He's done a lot of carrying for us this year. He's won a lot of big games. He's thrown for 500 yards. He's won game winning drives. He's did it in a 2-minute. He's done a lot of really good things, and I got a lot of confidence that he can go out there, gather himself, be ready to play, and get us back on track, right? You know, you don't want to lose the fact that you still have the pin. You're still 6-6. You're still tied or got a half game of lead, however you want to look at it, on first place. And you want this guy to finish what he started. And I got a lot of confidence he'll go out there and be able to do that.
And, Coach, we echo those sentiments because he was the focal point. Everybody from Bijan to guys on the defensive side talk about his leadership, the intangibles, everything he brings here. Is like almost like another coach. Saw it on the sideline myself in Tampa. Do you give him his space? Do you talk to him? Does Zach, do you sit down with him and say, how can we help you?
He's pretty good with the routine and the rhythm that he has. You know, normally he always comes and talks, and he has the ability to compartmentalize his thoughts and bring them in and be able to say it to the people he needs to say it to, whether it's myself, whether it's Zach, whether it's TJ. Win, lose, or draw, you know, might I add. And throw for 500 yards or not, you know, he's going to be able to put all those things together and see what he left out there. You know, it's always the glass is always half full when you're talking about playing the quarterback position, and he's always that way regardless. And then having a tough game on things that he knows he can complete or he knows he can get done or he knows he can execute better, that's always going to be a little tougher on you when you're that hard on yourself and that critical on yourself. And we all need a little help sometimes to be brought back. And, like, that's what we all kicking. That's what his teammates kicking. That's our job. That's our job to pick him up. That's our job to bring him back and let him go through his process this week. Right? The minute you go out there on the field and get the new game plan, and you go out there and you're able to execute things and you get back in the huddle, it's time to go to work. And you got to shut all that stuff out. And it's a part of the mental toughness that comes along with playing this game.
Coach Raheem Morris joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Dukes and Bell, as we visit with Coach each and every week exclusively here on the show. As we talk about coordinators, first time defensive coordinator, when you got that opportunity, and then you go back and watch a game, you'd be like, damn, I should have ran that, or, you know, critiquing yourself. And I'm wondering the process with Zach being a first-time coordinator. Last week, Coach, we're running the ball, killing him, like B is going off, and we're like, let's keep running the ball. Right. And I felt like we went away from it. And in those moments, I know you're allowing your coaching staff to have the freedom to do what they need to do to coach. But as you guys review and look back at stuff, how do you view that, and what do you tell him as a first-time coordinator?
Yeah, it's always hard to say, even when you're a first-time coordinator. I don't care how long you've been doing it. There's always going to be calls you got out there that you don't like, that you're going to want back. You know, and it's hard to say when you run the ball 37 times last week that you want to do it more. You know, like, what are some things left out there in the run game? Yes, right? Do you want your average to look a little bit better because you want to break one of those things off and absolutely run one for 40 yards to make that thing even look better, to not have to even call the next plays? Yes. Like, are there times where you open up things in the run game where it looks good in the play action pass and something doesn't go your way? There's no doubt about it. Like, when you call those plays, you're hoping and you feel like they can get executed. And then when you get it out there and it's something that look that you're not personally, that you didn't personally get or you didn't want, yes, you want to pull it back, and you can't always go get it out of air without spending timeouts or using some of those things. So there's always going to be things that he's going to want back. And this has been all season. This has been right from the beginning. Like, you know, when you don't call it, you're on the side. You're the best second guesser in the world. I've been there for a long time, you know, looking at Monty Kiffin, being around some of the great coordinators, around with Jim Haslett and some of those type of guys. You're a great second caller. And then when you go do it and you're making these calls, and then after the game, you got to reflect for yourself and say, man, I would want that back, or I didn't like that call, or I wish I had this play called back, or whatever the case may be. And I know Zach does that every single week, you know, no matter what, just like Kurt, no matter whether it's the 500 yards or whether it's not a great game and we had the interceptions, right? But there was a lot of really good looks out there. We left a lot of – and things would look a lot differently if we were to complete some of the balls, the opportunity balls that we had out there that we didn't get done, like in that first drive to Mooney.
Coach Raheem Morris, guys, live inside the Ticketmaster Studios up here at Flowery Branch. There are Hall of Fame quarterbacks that have been benched, and they've had great careers. What was it ever an intent, ever moment in that game where you say, look, Kirk is a pro, but he's having a bad day in the office. Maybe I bring Penix out and see if he can give us a spark, even though the game was still – because it was a one-possession game, that wasn't even in your mind?
The game's just way too close, and he's just way too one play away to go out there and win it for us. If you just pan back just short time ago, we played Philadelphia Eagles. We're at that place. It's not going great on offense. We're running the football well. We're doing really good. We're holding them on defense. We're keeping it tight enough. And then all of a sudden, boom, lightning strikes. You hit Mooney on a zero. You go for one on fourth down. You get a fourth and two. You get that one. Then, boom, they go zero. You hit Mooney on a zero across the middle of the field. Touchdown. You get the ball in the last drive of the game, and he goes right down the field, and he scores a touchdown. Right? There's been also games where we played in New Orleans where we didn't score an offensive touchdown and won the game. We scored on special teams, and we also scored on defense. Right? So this team is built to win. And no matter what they want to do, and it's not necessarily come at the expense of pointing the finger or blaming a guy when you want to bench him, right? A lot of times in this profession, we pull the triggers too quickly on some of these guys that got just intangibles to go out there and win football games. And we've seen them do that in these moments here already in this short season that we've had together. And every time he's out there, it gives you belief that he can go out there and win it.
Yeah, it's interesting as we talk about all the things that played out in our last game. And we are going to talk about the Vikings, guys,
because I get the excitement. I started it. I drafted Penix. I completely understand where you guys are coming from. But like,
you got an insurance policy. So that's like, part of it.
I'm not going to tell you. You guys are not wrong for feeling that way. It was the excitement that we had for wanting to go get this guy and this young man and bring him in here and learn from a crafty veteran, a guy that can go out there and win football games. But it doesn't change the fact that Kurt has us in first place and Kurt has his position to go out there and really win the South. And it's all within arm's reach.
Woo, man.
Plus, people forget. I know the last three games, okay, they are what they are, but the way they started the season, the way things were going for Kirk Cousins and this team, minus the week one loss, but after that, right?
Yeah, well,
I would ask you, what people are you talking about?
Oh, no. Oh. No.
What people?
No, I'm talking, you know what I'm doing?
I have turntables.
I'm talking about the people that you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I would tell you that those people...
Maybe some talking heads on TV.
What's the old saying? You can't see more than... you can't see anything that's not right in front of you or whatever. There's like...
Kind of I know some, where you're going.
Some kind of old saying like... That don't...
That's one of us.
Tunnel vision.
There you go.
Fans have tunnel vision, Tiff. And yes. They only see the last thing you did. You know, just like the... If we talk about Georgia next segment, I say something that's not... That they're not going to win. All of the good things I've said the entire time I've been on a host at the station or working at the station about Georgia and Kirby Smart are out the window, and I'm a clown and a fanboy for Florida, and I hate Georgia. Right. That's what they're all going to say. And that's what that's how fans feel about players' performances. You're only as good as the last thing you put out there to them, and that's how they view things. That's how you – and media, in a lot of ways – represents that, and that's how they write, talk, and act about said players.
Well, and I think, listen, I don't, and this is something I always struggle with on the player side of it in the locker room, because you as a player, you look at the season as a whole, right? But I understand on this side of it, you are hyper-focused at 1 o'clock on Sunday, right? Every media guy is there ready to look at the first formation and how far walked up the corners are after the bye week, and you know how many times Kirk runs play action. And when things don't go according to plan like you think they should, you tend to hyper-focus on that. And look, it's not just a loss. It's three losses and a bye week. And so I think that – and Raheem obviously was very receptive to that. I thought it was interesting. And guys, I've been around these quarterback battles before. I've been around, you know, teams that are, hey, you play the backup when you play the backup. You don't play the backup normally when the quarterback isn't playing well or when you think he's not winning games. You play the backup quarterback when the starter is actively losing games for you, all right, and actively losing the season for you. So I think that's the you know, kind of have to weigh, you know, what Raheem is saying, because I think that he's looking at Kirk going, he probably lost that game, right? But if he starts losing the season, he mentioned that they were in first place by a half game because of tiebreaker. I hear in his voice that if they start losing the season because of Kirk, then that's when you have to look at making decisions.
No, that's exactly what I heard within that too. You're going to stick with him. There's not going to be a Michael Penix sighting, I don't believe, this coming weekend. I think it's going to take a lot more than that. As you just highlighted, yeah, for them to actually end up making a switch.
Yeah, and the word insurance policy was used in that interview. And I just don't think that they view Michael Penix as an insurance policy.
I don't either.
I think they view him as a future. And if a major injury happened, then the future would be now. But I don't think it's like, oh, well, if this guy sucks today, we got this other guy and we'll see what he is. Because you don't know. Michael Penix has only played in a couple of situations in the NFL, and they were both mop-up duty, and so to speak, the game was out of hand. So you don't know what he's going to be like in those situations in the NFL, because we've seen clutch players go to the NFL and not play well in clutch situations.
I think it's the connotation that you're putting with the term, yeah, insurance policy.
I think when you drafted him, it would have been fine to say you drafted him as an insurance policy. You don't know what he's cut. You know what Kirk's doing, yeah, off the Achilles. You really don't know what he's going to be with this team or what he's with, mm-hmm, with Zach. I think
now
that's
that I
fair.
Think about it, yeah.
I disagree. I think they drafted him to say we're going to let this guy sit because we think Kirk's the next 2 years. That's what the contract tells me.
I hear both
me.
Of you, but I think when you think of backup quarterback, that is what you think of just in general because it's a backup quarterback.
Yeah, but I mean that's fair. That's fair. Yeah.
When we come back, we are a day removed from an early signing period for some high school players trying to make their way to the college ranks. And there's also been some shakeups coaching-wise in the college ranks as well. We will let you know about it when we come back here and give you the headlines for college football on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back here on the Morning Shift, and yesterday was a pretty big day for some high school football players, especially in the area, around the country, as they try to gear up to take the steps to the next level. So we had what was kind of an early signing period, early signing day, unfold yesterday.
Yeah, the most Georgia recruits that Kirby Smart has signed in his tenure. You're still waiting on five-star defensive lineman Justice Terry to make his decision coming up on Friday, but 21 Georgians signing with the University of Georgia. And to give you some insight of that, on the flip side, Kalen DeBoer's class over at Alabama, the least amount of Alabama players I think they've ever signed, and they didn't sign one top 10 in-state prospect over Alabama. It's just different recruiting beds, and there's so much talent to be had in the state of Georgia. So Kirby Smart continues on that trajectory, man. He's killing it.
That is wild.
Right, I know. Auburn, I believe, signed all the top 10 prospects from the state of Alabama. Bama ended up with, I think, 7 from California, which is just nuts. But I think, you know, look, those are the relationships that Kalen DeBoer had coming into it. So it is what it is. But it's just, again, Kirby, 21 from the state of Georgia. It's the most he's ever signed in his tenure at Georgia. And I think that just speaks to the long-term relationships that he's built around the state.
And you wonder why they're not on this list that I'm taking a look at from CBS Sports' Andrew Ivins. He has the winners and losers of signing day, and he has Oregon as a winner. They have Texas, Florida, South Carolina. Also on this list is Georgia Tech. So I thought that was significant.
For sure.
The best signing day class in the history of Georgia Tech was, this is going to be this incoming class with Brent Key. You know what's funny is you were talking about Georgia and you mentioned Auburn. Florida jumped from in the 50s to the top, some would say 10. Some
yeah, they
at
ranked
10.
Them 10 on this. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know where they're ranked in the SEC?
In seventh.
Eight, depending on which site you go, seven or eight.
Yeah.
That is, yeah. Yeah. Oh, 247. 247 has, now you're using CBS, which had them at a 10.
I think it's 247. I think it is
247 had them around like 11 or 10. And they literally have them seven, though, in the SEC because nationally, this is the way that 247 has the rankings. Texas won. They jumped from three. Alabama fell to two. Georgia went from two to three. Then Oregon, Ohio State. Then Auburn, Michigan, LSU, A&M, Tennessee, Florida. So you had a boom, right? And you're still seven or eight in the SEC. But the reality is these classes bear out differently. Guys transfer. But that's still a big day for a program. But it's still middle of the road in the SEC. Now, how you coach them and how your schedule plays out in 2 years, all of those things come in, too.
There is a mathematic equation. And by the way, Georgia, Florida made a good run at Ryan Montgomery, the Georgia signee. Ended up signing with Georgia, but Florida evidently made that very hotly contested there at the last minute.
They almost got Dallas Wilson, who Oregon ended up securing a five-star receiver.
Yeah, so they were hot at it yesterday. I don't think there was a ton. I think there was one flip to Florida State, but I think they also got somebody back from Florida State for this Georgia class. And, you know, there is a, to your point about it being a top 10 class or whatever, there is a scientific equation, or there at least there used to be, about how far down you could fall with your last four, the average of your last four signing classes, and to whether or not you could win a national title. There is a distinct, like, it's like, oh, you know, recruiting's overrated. It is probably on an individual basis, but team-wise, there is a straight-up, like, equation you have to have. You have to be in the top 10 for the last 4 years, or you have zero shot at a national title.
When I think, you know where I think it's overrated, and it's not a lot of class, but if you got, like, let's just say you got two or three five stars, right? And then a main portion of your class would be made up of three stars. You might be higher up a list than, because of the way that these people next time, like recruiting ranking sites rank it. And then you could say it's overrated because one of those five stars might be hurt, one might be really good, and the other might transfer or something, or one might be a bust, whatever. To me, you want to be in that mix of one, at least one five-star class with a plethora of four stars. Because, dude, and Tiffany, there just might be like, there might be one little thing that's evaluated that makes a guy from a five to a four, depending on who's ranking him. And in reality, you might develop that player into a five-star. Hell, David Pollock's a three-time All-American. He was a three-star. Yeah. Were you a...
I was a four-star.
Four-star, and you became an All-American. So, see? And a national champion.
Well, no.
And Atlanta Falcon.
I think there's a lot, like I said, on an individual basis, like just looking at one recruit, like it to me, the stars mean nothing. But when you start getting to the overall class, that's when recruiting really hits home in a big day yesterday.
All right, let's get to some news here with Oklahoma. They've got a lot of people leaving, it seems. They fired their defense, Oklahoma State. So I'm talking about the state of Oklahoma. They fired their offensive and defensive coordinators after posting their worst winning percentage since 1991. Oh, yeah.
No, the Pokes.
No,
I was going to say, Mike Gundy, this is the I'm firing everybody tour.
How does he still keep surviving?
Well, he's an alumni.
I know.
He was the OC there, if I'm not mistaken, when Les was there. He took over when Les left for LSU. And there's a lot of money in the program.
Yeah.
But,
ton.
It, you know, 8-5, a 10-3 here, that's kind of what they are. I mean,
It's what they've been even when I worked in Oklahoma back in 2011 or something like that. Well, I just think also it's Mike Gundy. When you think of Oklahoma State, that's who you think of. I don't believe that he's going to leave that program until he's ready to leave and he wants to retire.
Well, but to both of y'all's point,
you say that's kind of what they are, and you say you go all the way back to when you worked there, that's what they were under Mike Gundy. But at what point does the money in the program go, you know what, we'd like a little bit more than this. Like, this is cool. It's a 7-win season.
I think it's like a comfortable – I think it's like an Oklahoma thing. I don't know.
When you said Oklahoma to start the segment, I was like, well, they fired their offensive coordinator like 6 weeks ago because they were so bad. They don't deal with that up there.
I feel like it's like – but even like Brett Venables, right? He had a little bit of his struggles. I feel like it's like Oklahoma's just a state of like tradition or something, I feel like. And that's why you don't see a whole lot
close.
Of like
– We hold ours close.
Yeah, that's why you see a lot of the guys at Oklahoma in particular get promoted up, right? You had Lincoln Riley who was there and then –
That loss still stings. So, I'm still hurting over Bama losing that 2 weeks ago.
You know what could force the issue is when if Iowa State wins the Big 12 – And then you come out this year. Now let's fast forward real quick to 2025, and you have another terrible year because that's what they had this year, terrible. And Colorado or Iowa State or one of those teams wins or plays for the Big 12 title again.
And I'm at the president.
Then it might be like, hey, we have as much money. We actually have more money than those two programs left from T. Boone Pickens. We should be doing that. We need more. That could be the only thing that put pressure.
I thought that we were there this year.
I don't think you're there this year.
No. Well, let's go to some Oklahoma news because quarterback Jackson Arnold is entering the transfer portal. He is a five-star prospect, a former five-star prospect. He started 9 games for the Sooners this season. It was kind of a roller coaster ride for him, though, wasn't it? He's a starter, then he's pulled for a couple games, then he's back as a starter, and then...
Yeah, remember that five-star I said plays like a two-star, like at the bust? That's kind of Jackson Arnold. He couldn't see anything. He wasn't able to read what was going on downfield. Everything was short. He could move with his legs. He had the other five-star come in, dethroned him. Then that didn't go well. A fresh start might be good, but he's going to have to develop a lot no matter where he goes.
We've heard from Coach Raheem Morris. We've heard from quarterback Kirk Cousins. Now it's time to hear from the OC, Zach Robinson. He doesn't think Cousins has been that bad over this 3-game stretch. You'll hear why next when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm.
This is my theme song.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
It was back in the day.
Okay.
Back here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, this is the Morning Shift. Bo, Mike, and Tiff.
I was eating, so I appreciate you.
How many grams of protein you got in that bite?
Yeah. I didn't realize. I was like, oh, crap, we're coming back. And I ate all this food. This hour brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. You can continue, Bo. I had to make sure to get that in.
Tiff, I'm not a player. I just crush a lot.
Dude.
Okay. All right.
No. But hey, you know what happened yesterday? We talked.
Tell us.
We talked 2 days ago about the weather and how it just hit. I mean, frigid.
Yeah.
And
polar all of a sudden.
And I went home yesterday and I was like, this is gonna be one of those days where I take a nap then gym, and then I strategically did it based on it was cold when I got home yesterday morning at like 9:45.
Okay.
And it warmed up, and then I kind of screwed up, and because when I went to the gym, it didn't leave me time to do the outdoor walk, so I did cardio indoors, and then I left the gym. I was like, man, it's warm. It feels good outside. Like,
it did feel good yesterday.
I could have done the outdoor walk instead of the treadmill, so I was kind of disappointed. Yeah. We were now entering, I think that, because into this morning, it was 25 yesterday when I left for work.
It rained last night. It had to rain at some point.
It did rain last night. Okay. But... It was 25 when I left for work yesterday. This morning it was 46. So we've already gotten in that. Now we're out of the frigid, and now we're kind of in that colder, warms up, nice day, back cold kind of.
We've worked backwards from the I'm dripping my faucets.
Yes.
I have a important question for you, Bo. When you do the cardio indoor walks instead of the outdoor walks, because you know Sprinkles usually goes on the outdoor walks with you. Does she get on the treadmill with you?
Not when I'm at the gym, because
those
I don't take her to
legs
the gym.
On that dog going a million
but,
miles an hour.
But I'll say this: we have a tread climber, and at home in the office. And there are days where I use it when it's like really bad weather outside, and she will bring every toy that she has, and she'll drop it like kind of near it or on it, and it kind of rolls off. And she'll leave all these toys, and then she'll get frustrated, and she'll go lay in front of the window where the sun comes through.
Too, that's actually hilarious.
You know she does it when she does it when I race too. She'll start dropping toys on the pedals. And I'm like, dude, I'm racing. And it's a whole thing. Then she gets mad.
Maybe you should pay attention to your dog.
Dude, my dog gets more attention than...
I'm going to an agility class today.
An agility class? What do you guys...
What does that look like?
Are you going to enter him in a dog show?
American Ninja Warrior kind of thing?
No, no. It's like... Well, I mean, he's really smart and like, I don't know if any of you out there... Walks. I could walk him 2 miles.
Okay. Oh, it's for your dog.
Yeah. What do you think for me?
You said you were going to an agility class.
And I was like, we're talking about dogs.
What are you doing? I was like, what is it? That's why I said it's an American Ninja Warrior. Like, what are you doing? That's not exactly Pilates or anything. Like, that's yeah. Okay.
No, I'm taking my dog to an agility
thing. Okay, that makes way more sense. I thought you were trying to go back to the Georgia State days. You know what I mean? Get limbered up.
Goodness,
I was like, man, good
no.
for you.
Are y'all hitting like a hot yoga class afterwards? Yeah. Or?
No. Yeah. What? All right.
Dog yoga.
They have
on.
Dog yoga.
They do.
But I think they supply the dog. I don't think you can bring your own dog.
Get out of here. All right. The Falcons OC, Zach Robinson, you know, we've talked about the numbers with Kirk Cousins over the last three games. I'm not going to harp on that yet again. But according to his OC, he doesn't think that Kirk has played, that his play has been poor over the last three game stretch as much as people, media, you know, out there do.
Absolutely. The quarterback's always going to get, you know, too much praise and too much criticism depending on how the game goes. So, you know, I thought the New Orleans game, he played really well. Obviously, there was one, you know, the interception towards the end of the game is what everybody sees. But for the most part, that game was pretty clean. Like I mentioned, the Denver game put that one on us. And then the things that we can clean up from last week. But I haven't viewed it as much of a, you know, consistent theme, I think, that maybe other people have. But it is what it is. That's your guys' job. And it's our job to, you know, coach these guys. And it's those guys' job to perform on Sundays. And that's certainly what comes with the territory.
I think what he's saying is completely fair, right? You lose games in a number of different ways. We're all hyper-focused on the fact that they're 0-3 and with a bye week sandwiched in their last 3 weeks. And I think it's completely fair of Zach to come out and say, look, doesn't mean he's played extremely poorly. I would argue back at Zach, and Zach, you know, mentions the media. Now, we've talked about it. Zach was with PFF 5 or 6 years ago. I would argue back at Zach then – and I think he says it like, hey, part of this is on us a couple of weeks ago in Denver. You know, I thought he played pretty good against New Orleans. But when you haven't thrown a touchdown pass in three straight games, I would argue back a little bit on that. And I know that that doesn't mean he's played poorly, but it also doesn't mean he's going out and winning games. And I think that's where a lot of media, fans, everybody else watching look at it and go, okay, well, then we need to start producing more touchdowns. I think that's fair to say as well.
I don't disagree with you. I always come from it from the you guys are like journalists from the reporter mind, right? So I'm not ragging on Kirk Cousins where I say the stats. I'm just giving facts.
Yeah, but I think
and I know, but the facts also, I know what you're going to say because they can be misleading when you're not actually watching the game as a whole, right? Or understanding it everybody's roles within that offense. So it does not, and I know this, and I'm sure a lot of people out there do know this, it doesn't all fall on the quarterback, but that is what you see, and that is because he's the leader of the team, and like Zach Robinson said, yeah, that's the guy that's probably going to get, you know, most of the praise when things go well and the bad stuff when they don't.
But, yes, and Zach is too. Zach gets blamed times when it's unfair. Like, Dylan, can you... I hate doing this on the air. We don't have to talk about it. Play cut 11. So before we get to this, there was a play at the game where Zach Robinson got a lot of criticism because I was talking with Harry Douglas in halftime. Me and Harry were talking. Harry's like, man, the game plan was going so well. You're moving the ball so well. Why would you run a jet sweep? And it looks silly. But Zach talks about it and says, like, it wasn't really the way it was supposed to run.
Yeah, I would say the first one, we got mixed up on the play call, not to get too far into it. And then the second one, I did not love the look that they ended up giving us. Obviously, you call play and you feel convicted about it. But after the result of it, you're like, well, that was stupid. So, you like it when you call it. They played a different defense than anticipated. And then, like I mentioned, the first one, we just got a little bit mixed up there with the motion.
No, I don't like the second explanation because I think you need to
you gotta have safety net built in.
Yes.
You have to.
Thank you.
That's how you design plays. You go and say, what's the worst thing that can happen, and what do we do if that happens?
But the first part, well, what happened? We don't know what happened.
So just so people that are listening, the first speed sweep was a speed sweep to Drake London, right? Where mm-hmm. Derwin James makes the play off the edge, and Ray-Ray McCloud can't get him blocked because he's blitzing off the edge.
Yeah.
And Ray-Ray's too far detached from the line of scrimmage.
So what happened was, I mean, it might have been the wrong play call, like as in Kirk heard the wrong play call, or so many things. And I'm saying all that to say that so many things happen in a play that it is impossible, unless you're in a huddle, it is impossible to say 1,000,000,000% sure that's exactly what happened. And that's why he said what he said about, well, you know, I thought he played good in New Orleans. The Denver game's on us. And he didn't come out and say it, but we can. If you go back and watch the game, Kirk played pretty bad against
Denver.
No,
LA.
Thank you. And so there's really only one game they feel he played terrible in. Is the point, right?
Well, his play has brought about some questions. We did play an interview from Dukes and Bell with Coach Raheem Morris, where, you know, Duke straight up asked him what's wrong with Kirk Cousins, and what that means is he's asking about just how he feels and if there's anything going on injury-wise, right? I know Mike and Bo, you guys pulled up a stat when it comes to maybe the zip in his throw.
His velocity, I think he was the first quarterback this year not to hit more than 33 miles an hour on his throws this past Sunday, and that's really astounding when you think about it. He's the first one in the NFL not to do that, so there hasn't been as much zip, Tiff.
So here's Zach Robinson on why they focus on Kirk's right knee bend in his throws.
Yeah, that's, you know, really where all your power is. You know, whether you're a baseball player and you're a batter or a pitcher, you get into that loaded position on your, you know, inside half of your back leg. That's where all your power's at. So certainly that's stuff that you emphasize with every quarterback, you know, dating back to Pop Warner football. And Kirk's heard that a bunch, you know, with Coach Yates and DJ, our quarterback coaches. So we'll continue to emphasize that, knowing that when that is right, he's got a lot of juice still. So we just got to make sure the fundamentals are clean at all times.
I didn't think he was stepping. When we went back and watched, I thought he rushed some throws, wasn't stepping into some. Like the Mooney one doesn't look like he steps into it at all.
Yeah.
It looks like it's a back foot throw. And I didn't think that it didn't feel like the pressure was that intense. You go back and look. You barely talked about Khalil Mack or Joey Bosa in any point in the game.
Yeah, I think as the game moved on and as things got more dire for the Falcons, you knew they were going to continue to pass the ball a little bit down the stretch. I think the pass rush kind of opened. But guys, it brings us back all the way to Week One, does it not? Remember when Zach Robinson put in that game plan in Week One, and we're all excited for, you know, the beautiful mind that Zach Robinson is and the cerebral ability of Kirk Cousins, and then you look at the game plan, you go, what on God's green earth did I just watch? Like, you're watching the game plan going, that was your game plan for T.J. Watt? That was what, you know, that's what you decided to do? It reminds me of that game because coming off of that game, every single one of us, we had not seen Kirk in preseason. Every single one of us came out of that game going, there's no way that Kirk's healthy and that's the game plan you put together. And I think that all these weeks later, to 11, whatever, 12 weeks later, we're asking the same question because of the lack of drive off of that back foot.
Well, And we all put it on Zach Robinson with the game plan. Our show did. We went back and watched. I heard other people talk about, you know, Cousins. I still don't think Cousins is hurt. I just don't think he just made really bad decisions. It was almost like you ever have that day where you wake up and you maybe didn't get enough sleep the night before, or you got too much sleep and you were just spacey and you didn't think clearly, and you're like,
all
man, I can't think right today. Maybe he didn't eat 90 grams of protein for breakfast, that was the problem. I don't know.
Do you remember when we talked about the throw he made down the seam to Darnell Mooney? And Arch asked him, and he was like, you know what? It's just one of those times where you put your guy up to bat, and you know he's going to win for you.
Against Tampa.
That's right. That is what it looked like he tried to do multiple times, put guys up to bat. He called them opportunity balls. And it didn't work out for him. And not only that, but it wasn't even close.
Well, they were opportunity balls without the opportunity.
The opportunity for the Chargers.
I meant for us, yeah.
Let's get you the latest NFL headlines when we return. Which team, as they prepare for the big stretch run, is bringing back a former running back to help them power through? We'll discuss next when we return here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are going in the huddle, and the Bills bringing back someone from the past. They are signing former All-Pro safety Micah Hyde for the stretch run. I think I said running back in my tease earlier.
Yeah, okay.
Now we're good.
Right.
Anyway, they're bringing back their safety, Micah Hyde, to Buffalo. So, and we know that they are trying to make that push. They clinched the AFC East title, and now they're trying to gear up to try to finally get over that hump and get to a Super Bowl.
And let's just talk about the process of doing this nowadays. This is just something. So they're going to sign him to practice squad, right? Try to get him ramped up, try to get him ready for game action, and then down the stretch, you hope that he can actually be of assistance. And this is just something you could not do until, what, Bo, maybe 4 years ago?
COVID changed all this.
You could not sign a guy that long in the tooth to the practice squad. And now you can, and it has completely changed the way these late-season signings have gone.
And here's the cool thing. I just want to say this real quick about the story. He announced his return, but he also told the media that he's definitely retiring after this two-month stint with the Bills, and he's just back to try to help them win a Super Bowl.
I respect this so much.
If we can't win a Super Bowl, I would not be bothered in any way, shape, or form if Buffalo won the Super Bowl.
Because yeah, they're fun to cheer for.
They're fun to cheer for. I love Josh Allen. You know, you've got three quarterbacks in the AFC that are so different but so similar at the same time. And Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and Josh Allen. I think no one would dispute they're all three elite players. One is extremely elite with his speed and his legs. The other is, I think, extremely elite with his power running and his and Lamar Jackson, his arm as well, because he can flick a wrist and throw it 70 yards. But Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes is extremely elite with his brain and his arm, but his legs is just a tool to use the other two more efficiently or more proficiently, I guess I should say.
And
it's kind of crazy.
Lamar has done that at times, and he's been able to do that. I would say I'm with you on the Buffalo thing, because I think that Buffalo's franchise, that you share like a misery bond.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? Like, they've had some heartbreaking moments in their franchise's history the same way Falcons fans have. The other thing I'll say, who was it last year that signed Eric Weddle, or maybe 2 years ago?
It was the Ravens that signed
him in the stretch run.
Yeah,
that was like,
it's a good memory.
You're like, man, like,
I had Weddle a couple interviews.
He felt like he came out of nowhere that year, right? And it feels like maybe they're trying to do the same thing here with Micah Hyde, and I'm here for it, man.
I just want to give my thoughts quickly on the Bills and the stuff that you guys were saying. When I had them week one, it was just cool to see. You had DeMar Hamlin come back. You had this new receiving core with a bunch of guys that kind of at various points in their career felt like they were told they weren't good enough and had been cut or had to, you know, bounce on to another team here and there. So I thought that aspect of them was cool. And then, of course, Josh Allen. Yeah. And then Josh Allen just doing what he does, being elite. Again, he powered through a wrist injury in the game that I had. But one cool thing that I didn't get to share with you guys is in our meeting with Sean McDermott, you know, we're casually talking. I think I'd asked a question. And within the answer to his question, he's like, well, you know, I mean, you're an athlete. And I'm sitting here like, wait, what? Did he slip that in? Like, how did he know that? And I thought that was cool when you have, I later learned. Yeah, he likes to know who he's talking to.
I love that.
He looks up stuff about, you know, the announcers.
It's like he's a, you know, government official walking in and getting the guy to his ear going, hey, Tiffany Blackman.
He just dropped it in and kept talking. And then in my head, I was like, wait a minute. Wait, did I tell him I played soccer? I have no idea. So
I don't want to ruin this story. I'm not sure he looked it up, but I'm sure he had someone
look it up. Exactly. You know, who knows?
I'm just kidding. I'm just being a little bit of a jerk there. It's just a joke. But the one thing I'll say about the Micah Hyde thing real quick, don't forget, they don't have to have him ever, I think, on the active roster. Because most likely he won't be active for a week or two, right?
Sure.
And then you can do a standard elevation. For, I think you get five, maybe? It's four or five.
I think it's four.
Because Damone Harris, who just had to be activated to the active roster for the Falcons, was that guy for a while. He played his way onto the roster.
Yeah, exactly.
This news, and Bo, you just alerted me to this because it came out yesterday evening. Dan Graziano of ESPN, he reports the NFL and Players Association agree to change to drug policies. So the NFL and NFL Players Association have agreed to several important changes to the league's drug policies that will go into effect this week. And one of them being the level of THC that is required to trigger a positive cannabis test has been increased from 150 nanograms per milliliter to 350. Also, teams will no longer be informed of the specific substance of abuse for which a player tested positive, only the positive result and the resulting discipline.
Yeah, there's also the performance-enhancing drug. There's the fine changes. The other thing that Tiff didn't mention is fentanyl, which has obviously become a problem in our country, right? The fentanyl abuse, and there's been a lot of deaths. The players have not been tested in previous policy, and there will be no discipline for a positive fentanyl test, but a player will be fined $15,000 if he refuses to attend a mandatory meeting about fentanyl resulting from a positive test. So they're not going to fine you necessarily for having it, but they are going to make you attend a meeting/class about it if it is in your system.
There was only two periods of time, if I remember correctly, that you were tested for a street drug when I was playing. And that was either going to happen around the time you reported, which was in April, or it was going to happen during training camp. Like, it was going to be one of those two times. There was only, and if you knew that if you took one in April, you weren't going to have one in August, you know? So it always blew my mind when anybody, and it doesn't happen very often. If you pay attention to it, the people that get dinged for street drugs as opposed to PEDs, it just doesn't happen often. It's because a lot of times the football players know when it's coming, right? I mean, that's just the bottom line. So I think you said that the threshold has gone up or vice versa in terms of what they're going to be looking for in THC, but the fentanyl one's interesting for sure.
That is interesting. Back to the Ravens, since we kind of touched on them a little bit ago with Eric Weddle. Well, they have a receiver, Deontay Johnson, who they acquired from the Panthers a few weeks ago, who has now been suspended for a game for conduct detrimental to the team. This is according to their general manager, Eric DaCosta. And this is because he refused to enter the Ravens game last week against the Eagles. They said in Eric DaCosta's statement, he noted that the decision, it was difficult to reach this. So not sure what's going on there.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a Deontay Johnson problem. Okay. There's a reason why he's not in Pittsburgh anymore. And there's a reason why he's not in Carolina anymore. In fact, when we played Carolina, that was a week, whatever, he didn't shut his mouth the entire game. He talked before, during, and after every play that he was actually on the field for. And the new Hard Knocks came out Tuesday. I caught some of it yesterday. If Mike Tomlin gives up on you, you're a lost cause. Because there's a part, because it was obviously last week where they played the Bengals. The very first drive, George Pickens is targeted and he's grabbed, pulled down a little bit. It's a pick six by Cincinnati. He comes to the sideline and Tomlin grabs him and says, "Hey, no, I need you. We need you." He goes, look at me. And we'll probably play it in last grade. He goes, "Look at me. We're gonna win this game. I need you. Are you with me?" And Pickens goes, "Yes, sir." Walks to the bench. Very next drive, he takes a little swing, little screen pass, houses it. It was only like a 30-yard play, but still. Mike Tomlin reaches players for whatever reason, and I think it's because of the respect he garners, obviously, but he reaches players. If he thinks he can't reach you any longer, that's when he cuts bait. Deontay Johnson is clearly someone that he didn't think he could reach anymore or was unreachable.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because, you know, look, you don't have to look any further than up the road at Charlotte. They actually are a team that has kind of gone through struggles but have started to almost turn a corner with what they've been. I can only imagine what Deontay Johnson probably had to say during the first tenure this year of Bryce Young and the switching quarterbacks and Bryce Young coming back. That's not the kind of guy you would want to be around a locker room like that when you're trying to build up confidence of players. Listen, there's nobody more well-equipped, in my opinion, than those two coaches in Harbaugh and Tomlin to deal with a guy like that. So I know they'll get it situated, but I cannot imagine, and it's happened a couple times the last few years, what it must take to be like, nah, man, I'm not going in. Like, whew.
I thought it was difficult decision part. Usually with stuff like that, you would just be like, yo, he's suspended. Yeah. So
this
I don't know. Where, maybe they just added some extra pad to it. By the way, that suspension will go into effect in week 15 when they face the New York Giants. And we'll have to see. I believe Drew Locke is back at quarterback for this team now for a second straight after the Tommy DeVito situation did not work out. So when we come back here, five straight for the Hawks. That is next, and we also have a mic'd up.
We got a mic'd up, Tiff. Had to take Christmas photos with Santa yesterday. I was not the hero that my wife wanted, but I'm the one she got. I'll tell you how I saved Christmas for my family yesterday. Sports Radio 910 again.
Now Jackson drives it. It's stolen by Bogey. Here comes Trey. It's a 3-on-1. Gets it underneath. Jalen Johnson jams it home. And the Hawks lead now 119-102.
That was Steve Holman on the call for your Atlanta Hawks games, and he was on the call for yet another Hawks win. They have won five straight now, taking this one from the Bucks 119-104. He mentioned Jalen Johnson in that highlight. He had 23 points and 13 boards. Mm. So they cut Milwaukee's winning streak, which was at seven games.
Is it and he was explosive yesterday. He exploded towards the rim just four or five times. Just unbelievable. I thought he was going to tear the rim off the backboard. A lot of fun to watch. I'm looking at the point totals in the box score, and I just think that this is eight guys with eight or more points is just – it's unbelievable sharing the wealth right now. And we've talked about, you know, what Quinn Snyder's teams would look like, what his offense would look like when he gets better defenders around Trey. You have that with Dyson. DeAndre Hunter played defense at a very high level last night, had a few different deflections and was doing some nice things. But you look at it, and Jalen's your team high with 23. It's a beautiful thing. Trey continues – to struggle shooting the ball. And any other time in Hawks history, you would have said that was a red flag because they have to outscore teams. And yet, just another well-rounded victory, and that's five straight now as you were underdogs out in Milwaukee.
You alluded to it. Red flag. He went 0-for-9 from the three-point line.
Yeah.
Had I told you at this time yesterday before the game, hey, Trey's going to go 0-for-9 from three-point land, and Giannis is going to make the free throw line 26 times, and they're going to he's going to have four more attempts than we have at all from the free throw line.
Yep.
He just said, we lost 118-104 or whatever.
Yeah. And there was a stretch, guys, and so I'm watching this game last night. I watched a pretty good chunk of it. There was a 10-minute stretch in the first half, maybe actually in the first quarter, where we were incredible, incredible offensively, could not be stopped, and then you kind of averaged out after that. There was a run, I believe, and we talked about it earlier. The Hawks go up. They're up by 20. The Bucks come back and shoot four straight threes and make it an eight-point game. And you're like, dude, this please don't do this. And yet, defense, man, defense is what always comes back around. We've mentioned it a number of times. They're playing defense at such a high level that it's beautiful to watch. And I just, we'll see what the draw is for next week in terms of the cup. But this is a team that I just can't wait till those buckets start falling for Trey, because I think they're going to be unstoppable when that comes around. It's going to be it's going to be a fun year to watch the Hawks play basketball.
Yeah, next week, right, is when the NBA Cup.
Right, I think they're still waiting on their draw for the NBA Cup.
I thought they get the Knicks.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. Okay.
So there you go. So they got that situated. That's going to be fun to kind of keep track of, man. But like I said, it's a fun team to watch right now. And if you haven't been down to State Farm yet, or haven't got what is it, FanDuel Sports Network or 92.9 plugged in when they're playing, it's a lot of fun. All right, speaking of not having fun, I was a Scrooge last night. Let's hit mic'd up. I have a feeling like there's a lot of people out there that vibe with what I'm about to say, man. I love Christmas and I love my family, but Lord knows when the day comes that I have to take my kids to sit on the big man's lap and take pictures and everybody wears something nice and the kids wear the PJs, it quite literally, guys, may be the worst day of the year. It may be the worst day of the year.
The worst day of
photo
the year?
Photo shoots.
That's
photo
that's...
shoots, period, might be the worst day of my year.
Okay.
I'm a very
okay.
blessed person, Tiff. If photo shoots with Santa are the worst day of the year, I'm living a pretty good life, I'll say that. But photo shoots with Santa, worst day of the year.
So what happened? Because you kind of teased us with it earlier.
Right.
This was not a great experience.
Okay. So we had to go to a different place. Usually we go up to Avalon. It's so slammed that you have to make an appointment. Like they do photo shoot with different families like every 8 minutes or something up at Avalon. We did not get an appointment early enough. You know, you guys, just the struggle. You didn't get an appointment with Santa early enough. So we had to make our way to a different Santa. Wife picks him up from daycare yesterday, and let's just say it wasn't quite to the level we've dealt with in the past in terms of just quality, workers and photos and everything else. So my wife is adamant that you're going to deal with this very soon. She's like, we're not disregarding the dog anymore. I want you to bring the dog
over. Part of this family.
He is part of this family, and we need photos with the dog.
Well, that
with
might
the kids
be,
in the PJs on Santa's lap.
That might be me wanting to bring the dog.
Exactly. Exactly. So the wife decides we're going to bring the dog. I'm rolling the dog through this place. I don't want to give away where we went because it wasn't a great experience.
Never mind. Sorry.
No, I'm not going to put him on blast. I'm not going to do that. So I'm wheeling the dog through this joint over to where the Santa's at. My kids and my wife are already there. We'd gotten them dressed. And the dog does great. I mean, he did phenomenal. Set him down next to Santa. I'm like, okay, everybody hop in. Let's knock this thing out. One photo's taken. Lady's like, all right, looks good. Wife's like, no. We all got dressed up. Kids are in their PJs. I got a dog in the middle of this joint. Like, let's take a couple more. She's like, oh, okay. Squeezing the jingle bell, you know, doing all the thing, trying to get everybody to look. Okay, got it. Wife's like, no. I didn't. I'm not paying this much money for you to take one photo and be done. Was everybody looking? Lady's like, yeah, everybody's looking. Everybody looks good. Yep, everybody's like, no, I'm looking at it right here. Got it. Dude, we look at the photos. They come out of this thing, which we paid good money for. I want to say upwards of like $80.
Wow.
And it's terrible. Absolutely freaking terrible. My daughter is looking off into space. My dog, has a rocket situation going on in the front. And my son looks, like he's the Joker from The Dark Knight. And like it just is bad.
Is his head out the window?
So So I was the hero. I was like, my wife's like, we're going back. I'm getting my money back. We're going to retake these photos. I'm like, no. I got this. All right. I had seen this Reddit page before, Photoshop Request. All right. So I go to Photoshop Request Reddit.
I've seen these Reddits
it's
before.
Insane.
They're wild.
It's insane. So I go to Photoshop Request on Reddit, and I find a guy that has done good work on there. I can see his work, and I just privately messaged him and said, hey, got a family Christmas photo that I need somebody to work on. Would you be interested? All right, if I can PayPal you or Venmo you or whatever. He's like, yeah, sure, send them on. So I send this guy the photos. He sends them back. I mean, most beautiful family photo you've ever seen. Somehow he doctored it up and kind of, copy and pasted, mixed and match, and everybody's looking at the camera and everybody's smiling, and you did such a good thing.
So,
if I sent you the photos, what did you think?
I thought they were excellent.
Right.
And I'm not even on Reddit like that. I didn't even know that exists. So it's almost like you went on the dark web.
I know. That's what I felt
like. And found someone to edit your family photos. But the pictures look great.
My wife was almost in tears when we left this joint. Like, she was like, I cannot believe we went through all this. Like, she knows that it's like my least favorite day. She knows that the kids hate putting on the PJs, and that she's asking a lot to bring the dog around. And with all that effort, she got that one snap of the camera from the girl. I was like, all right.
Said they were going to take one picture.
That's not how what they're supposed to do. I think that there was like an uncomfortability with the dog. First of all, there's a sign next to him that says "Dog's welcome." There's an uncomfortability there. It was not a good experience. I'll just say that.
Has she seen the new pictures?
Yes.
What does she think?
Very excited.
Okay.
She's
very
like,
happy.
This is
now,
awesome. I don't know how you pulled this off. I'm like, yeah, well, look, just trust me, okay? I got this.
Fast forward 30 years?
Go ahead.
You're sitting there. Ridge has came home with a woman.
Whoa.
And
attaboy.
Stevie is there. We're not going to put her with a man. That's just weird.
No. Not going to be
weirdos.
And I'm just saying Ridge has a family
sure.
is what my point.
Sure.
And y'all are going through Christmas photos of the past.
Yeah.
And you're going to be like,
what am I saying? Like, Santa Claus?
You're like, what are you laughing at? Like, wait, this, Mrs. Ridge is going, what are you laughing at, Mrs. Johnson?
It will be Mrs. Johnson at that point.
You don't know the story. You don't know the story.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell the story about how, are you going to tell it?
If I remember in 30 years, I hope so. Because I hope my memory is sharp enough, when I'm in my late 60s. That I can be able to knock out that story. I don't know that it will be, but if I remember it, yeah. I'll be like, oh, you know what? We used to have this thing called Photoshop. I know you guys have had AI
we'll have
for 30 years.
Then.
I know.
Your son could be married to a robot.
It could
then.
Be.
Whoa.
I'm just kidding.
It
could be.
I watched 5 minutes.
If she's beautiful and intelligent, then yes.
Hold on. You know what I mean? I watched 5 minutes of that movie
Where? We're in Westworld all of a sudden.
Where, did you guys see any of that movie with who played what's my Joaquin Phoenix?
Yes.
Where he's in love with like the AI boss.
Yeah.
Thing.
Joaquin.
That was the creepiest crap I ever watched. I turned that off immediately. I was like, this is even too creepy and weird for
never
me.
Watched.
That's not
like,
the same movie as Ex Machina, right? It's not the same movie?
No, I don't think so.
So I went off the rails. But I am glad that you got. I saw the photos. Yeah. They are quite lovely. Everybody will be happy when they are sent out.
So look, when I
her.
When I
her, yes,
yeah,
the robot.
Right.
And he's got a
no,
a mustache.
Brought us back on track.
Guys would be in prison for, you know.
When I see my wife next, I expect there to be like a confetti and tinsel parade, some snow being thrown up in the air.
Dude,
because
I am
the
that.
Hero.
She's just gonna say hero. She's gonna give you a hug and say,
how
I appreciate
much did
that.
These like dark web photo corrections
20 bucks.
Cost you?
20 right. bucks. I paid a guy 20
All
bucks.
Right.
American? Yeah.
That was another
no,
country.
No, he's not located here. there was definitely a transfer rate on the old PayPal.
When you like somehow that the photos that you his email he's gonna hack into your system.
I know he's got your family's
PayPal,
faces
man.
Now.
PayPal's king.
Sorry. Yeah. When we come back here, maybe Rusty has some thoughts on that. We've got our guy Rusty Menzel joining us, especially after we had a National Signing Day yesterday. Lots to cover when he joins us in studio next on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart. Lasting clean. We're in our 8 o'clock hour of the Morning Shift. It is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. We've got the Rusty Menzel in here with us this morning.
The man had smoke coming off his Skechers when he walked
in. On the heels of signing day.
I feel like 1991 senior trip.
How much
the
would
morning
you pay
after
for this coffee. Right.
All right,
now?
I would. Let me check my 401k this morning.
The GIF you posted yesterday of the guy pouring coffee all over himself was just perfect.
That was at like 5:20.
So
I'd woke up at like 4:30.
I was going to say real quick, give what your schedule was yesterday because it's crazy.
I will say this for my guys, and they're probably listening, Dogs HQ, we led the network yesterday on three with signups. We led the network with content produced. My guys worked their ass off. I was extremely proud, but we were up from probably 4:30 in the morning, and I fell asleep last night around 11:10, and Georgia flipped a kid at 11:58. So they weren't done for the day, and
man,
I woke up at 5 this morning. I go, my alert on my phone was like, Georgia got another guy because their official Twitter. I was like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah. What did happen? Like, give us the 30-second version of Georgia signing day.
They held on to their class. They did not have a great, I would say, closing day. But I think if Georgia fans kind of knew what went on behind the scenes, they would be extremely happy because they didn't sign a bunch of 5-stars because they liked the dog walk. I'm just going to be straight. You don't get 5-stars anymore because your tutors are great.
They weren't worried about making sure their majors
they
were
not.
Were
no,
good.
No, yeah. They didn't meet with academic counselors yesterday. And I'm just going to be straight. But Georgia did a very good job of holding on to kids that they really, really need. I think they had a really good class. They didn't finish great yesterday. But I think Georgia overall still has a chance to have a top 2 or 3 signing class.
I saw Jeff Sintel's piece yesterday that Georgia signed 21 Georgia kids, which is something I don't think Kirby's done in his time there so far.
Not even close.
Right.
And I'll tell you what the focus is. You want kids that want to play for the Georgia Bulldogs that grow up watching the Georgia Bulldogs. The thought process there is probably would not be so quick to go into the portal.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, you get rid of the freshman blues with some of these guys that want to stay closer to home and don't want to, you know, I think that's a worry. I was kind of comparing it for people to Alabama. Alabama didn't sign a top 10 player in Alabama yesterday.
Crazy, man.
Crazy.
That is
7
nuts.
Kids from California.
Well, you look at the makeup of that staff, and no question, they use their connections. Now, they're going to spend more time building those connections in the state of Alabama.
Yeah.
Guaranteed, but they weren't playing around. Their connections were in California,
sure,
and they capitalized on that. Georgia's done that as well with times getting played. Brock Bowers from California, Kendall Milton from California,
yep.
Darnell Washington's from Las Vegas.
Yep.
That doesn't mean you're not getting good players. It's just a little different philosophy.
Okay, Brent Key had put together the greatest signing class in Georgia Tech history from what I've read.
Yep.
How the hell did he do
that?
Yeah,
what's the secret?
Well, they're waiting on. Well, they're not going to Georgia Tech about the academics right now.
Yeah.
I mean,
but I mean, even
is,
so, there's been
great,
questions about the money backing there.
Georgia Tech is in.
They're
in.
Yeah, I was
they're
gonna
in.
Say,
I
they're
mean,
all
listen, let me tell you this. I'm not going to get Georgia Tech fans lighting me up. That is a degree that speaks for itself. And there's a lot of kids that go to Tech because of that. But they won some players yesterday that probably didn't have the academic center in their mind. And they're still waiting on, you know, Josh Petty to sign. That's the one, the five-star. I do think from everything that I have heard that he is going to sign. But he has a real agent. He has a real marketing team. And those are real contracts. And everything is going to be line by line going through. David Sanders, the number one offensive tackle in America, as far as I know 5 minutes ago, he has not signed. I anticipate him signing with Tennessee. But I can tell you that contract is going to be what they agreed upon, and maybe Tennessee did everything and they tried to add something in. I don't know that. But those are two five-star linemen that did not sign yesterday. Very well could sign today.
That's I was going to say, the Petty one, is that coming down to tomorrow? Who is the announcement tomorrow?
Tomorrow's Justice Terry.
There you go, Justice Terry. That's right. We said that earlier.
There's a window that these kids can sign, and tomorrow's the last day. And then it closes until February.
All right, cool.
And you'll get some sleep, a little bit of sleep then.
How many inbound text messages did you have yesterday, would you think? Just guesstimate.
Oh,
1,000?
Let me do this. I'm sitting at 470 unread text messages. So I don't really know. I don't really know.
Stress me out,
dude. I would not be able to handle that. This weekend.
If you don't open it, you don't know.
There you go.
So, you know what I mean?
Sorry, man. I didn't see it.
No.
This weekend, championship weekend.
Yeah.
You got a little game here?
Yeah, I just saw it when I pulled in the red light this morning. So I pulled in the station here at 7:05, and I sent it to red light. A guy comes out of the Starbucks, and he's got a Hook'em Texas sweatshirt on.
They're going to come in today.
They're going to start coming in today and tonight. You're going to start seeing Texas. This is the first time they've been here. I would imagine tonight you'll start seeing a lot of Texas fans around town.
Man, that's going to be a big one.
How does Georgia pull it off again? I think Georgia go back and you look at the game and you kind of analyze it, and other than Carson Beck's interceptions, Georgia kind of dominated that football game.
Question, why is Texas favored right now?
I think the health of Georgia and what you've seen out of Georgia the last couple, just hot and cold, they still haven't played a clean game. They didn't play a clean game there, and they beat Texas by two touchdowns because they had three interceptions.
Yeah.
Georgia held Texas. Here's the stat, guys. Georgia had 7 sacks, 10 tackles for a loss. Texas had 27 rushes for 31 yards. Ooh. That's a dominating performance. And those two tackles are both highly projected NFL first-rounders. Yeah. If I've got anything to me and I'm that, I cannot wait to face Mykel Williams and Jalen Walker again to erase that tape.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a grown man tape that you got beat up the first match.
To your point, I know that Kirby talked about Arch Manning yesterday and about his mobility and what he can do. They kind of put Arch in last time in kind of a bad situation, kind of took him right back out. How much do you think Arch Manning plays a pivotal role in this? Because they do need to run the ball more efficiently. And they weren't able to do that last time against Georgia. And it sounds like Kirby kind of knows it's coming.
Dude, would you not?
I would.
I mean,
I've said it a dozen times on here.
Listen,
I would.
He's not Haynes King, but I don't think people realize how big Arch Manning is in person and what type of athlete he is.
There you go.
He's got an elite arm, but this dude is put together. He is a big dude in person. And if I'm Sark and the two turnovers I had in the red zone last week, I'm going to put it in the hands of Arch Manning and give him the RPO option. You know what I mean? Because here's what Georgia's been successful with, and Nick Saban did this for a long time. Mike, I think you agree. If you know where that quarterback is, you're in trouble. And Georgia did not worry about Quinn Ewers beating them with his legs.
Yeah.
You got to add that element.
There's no doubt about that. And I said the same thing the other day. I was like, you know, Bama, I don't know if Bama should be in or not.
Yeah.
But Bama is just historically, when you look at Kirby and all these defenses, I'm like, how can Bama get a pro-style quarterback in the playoffs? That's what the next thing is. And that's the same thing I think that Kirby and those guys were able to tee off on when they went against Quinn.
Show me the spot and we'll get there.
Exactly.
Show me the spot.
It's just crazy.
Do you have a problem with the rankings? Do you have a problem with Miami being out? Because it looks like SMU loses, they might still be in, but Miami is bye-bye.
Miami's cooked. You're not going to hurt my feelings either way.
I think Miami had every opportunity to handle that. And what were they up, 20-0?
21-0.
Yeah. They were up 20. They were up 20. By the way, we're going to have Fran Brown on the show next week on the Steakhouse, a little early plug.
Well, his interview, holy smokes, afterwards.
I talked to him last night a little bit just on text, setting this up, and Fran Brown's a huge Georgia guy. He's a huge Kirby Smart guy. You know what I mean? I asked him about Dabo. The comments Dabo said, if they win the national championship, he's going to have Fran Brown in the parade.
He goes, oh, really?
Yeah. He said, which was great. And he said it. He told Dabo, he said, man, I'm pulling for you, but I'm telling you right now, if you play Georgia, go Dogs.
Hey, how ironic would it be, real quick, if Dabo and Clemson won a national title off the backs of Fran Brown and Kyle McCord, who is a what? Transfer portal player.
Yeah.
Which Dabo says, oh, no, we don't do that.
Yeah. Well,
he better have Kyle McCord's ass in that parade, too.
If Clemson wins a national championship, then South Carolina fan, they're going to be, it's going to be rough.
I want to pivot really quick away from Texas, Georgia, and talk a little bit more about signing day.
Mm-hmm.
How different is signing day now for you? You've covered it a long time. Yeah. Signing day has completely changed from what it was when you started doing it. How different is signing day nowadays in terms of communicating with players from your perspective and from coaches' perspective?
Well, for 10, 12 years, I would build a 2 to 3 year relationship with the player and the parents.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, I needed the information at the end, and if we got it from them, we did, we didn't. I knew, just take for example, I knew everything that was going on with Reuben Foster from the start because I knew Reuben since he was a ninth grader, and it was a wild one.
The Auburn tattoo.
But I knew everything until the end, what was going on there.
Yeah.
Trevor Lawrence, I knew everything that was going on to the end, in all these guys. Now, unfortunately, you basically have to talk to an agent to kind of know what's going on.
I was going to ask, I feel like you need more caffeine this morning.
Yeah,
I feel like you've been put through the ringer yesterday.
It was really hard to cover because, you know, you don't reach out to the kid on signing day. I know he's getting killed. Who are the people around him that are making the decisions? For example, I'm covering Osmani Kroma, the running back at Lee County. I'm covering Jeremiah McLeod at Lee County.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I remember that, yep.
Yeah, so I know Dean Fabrizio for 12 years, the head coach, and I have a great relationship with him. I called him yesterday morning, he goes, Rusty, don't have one clue what's going on.
Wow.
Well, that's
don't have
wow.
one clue. I am preparing us to play in the biggest playoff game we've played in a long time against Milton, and I don't know what those two kids are going to do, but at 2 o'clock, we're all going to find out.
That's kind of my question. Was it a record number of flips yesterday? Because your guy, Hayes Fawcett,
yeah.
I actually went and followed him yesterday because, Florida went on a – Billy Napier went on a tear the last month and a half of the season getting recruits. But I don't remember ever seeing that many flips. And Hayes Fawcett had every single one, credit to him.
He's got ones that were not used. You know why they weren't used? Because the school that you were committed to stepped up their contract.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. So, hey, I'm a proud dad moment. I'm the one that kind of put Hayes on.
Yeah.
I called him one day. I said, who are you? What's going on? I called Shannon Terry. I was like, Shannon, this kid's something now. He goes, who is Hayes Fawcett? So he watched him for about 3 days, and he called me back. He goes, get me on the phone with this guy.
Yes. I love that.
And I will say this, that Hayes has been very, very thankful. He sends me texts all the time. But he absolutely has the trust of every top football player in America. He breaks
everything. He's like Rappaport.
Well, yeah, the funny thing
but
is,
more trustworthy.
He's a great one.
The funny thing is, real quick, I know we got to go. I thought he was one of those. I thought he was like that Dove Climbing guy. That's like a fake.
No,
but I saw you retweet him one day, and I go, well, maybe this guy has some. You know, maybe he's credible.
Let me tell you something. He had no idea what he was sitting on. I said, Hayes, we need to talk. And I had some long talks. He didn't know who Shannon Terry was.
That winning lottery
just
ticket.
Just tell him, make sure he kicks up his 10%.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. He is getting paid well.
Rusty, always good to have you in studio with us.
I need
us.
Coffee.
And you know what?
I got to say one thing before I go, because I'm confident in this.
Is it?
It's not you.
Okay.
It's not your hostage picture. We'll talk about that later.
He always takes
shots at me. I am confident that Bo's theme song was not I Crush a Lot.
No.
I am confident in that.
We are all sure of that, Rusty.
Well, I had to say something, Rusty.
I am confident in that.
You can follow Rusty on X at Rusty Manziel. Rusty, thanks for joining us this morning. Up next, what is stopping this Falcons offense? That's on the way when we return here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Coach Flores does an unbelievable job with those guys. They've got great talent across the board. The scheme is good. So we got to be definitely sound and have, the right answers for those things if they do present themselves. Sometimes they show up more often than not. But I definitely got to have sound answers. And so definitely the preparation's been good so far. We've got a long way to go to get ready for these guys, though.
That was Falcons offensive coordinator Zach Robinson on the defense that they're going to face in the Minnesota Vikings, led by Brian Flores, or D.C.
B-Flow.
You know what I
mean? B-Flow, as Raheem called him the other day. B-Flow.
No, Ra called him B-Flow.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Ra called him B-Flow. Yeah. yeah, I don't know. I guess
he's
I'm not
on first name. But, you know, nickname basis.
When I hear when I heard Mike Bell yesterday, hey, B was running the ball real well. Or was that B? Or was that Mike or Carl? I don't remember. B was running the ball real well.
I could see one of them doing
I'm
it.
I'm like,
Calling Bijan B?
Yeah, B. B.
No one calls him that.
Yeah,
B. Unless it's one of their coaches, unless it was Coach Woods.
No, it was definitely Michael. You know, hey, B was running the ball well. Mm-hmm. We, you know, hey, can we stick with B running the ball?
I think you can call him John next. John was running the ball well.
Rob.
Maybe they're on a different, maybe they have a different relationship.
They don't. No, it's
they
okay.
Don't. No, it's okay. We listen, Tiff, I'm like, yeah, look, give anybody the benefit of the doubt. But when you have the doubt in your mind and you know that they don't deserve the benefit, I'm going to say they don't.
I was going to say,
on a beat.
I was going to say, I'll give anybody the benefit of the doubt unless I know them.
Exactly.
no. Oh, then you lose it. But, you know, let's digress. We don't want to go down that road. You know, anyways. Bijan did have a good day. In fact, every time you go back and look at what happened last week, you go, huh. We won in every facet of the game. Every one of our 47 or 46, whatever it is these days, 48, 47 or 46, 45 of our players beat their 45. We just had one. We just had one player that didn't necessarily do everything they needed to do to win. And he knows it. It has to be said. You know, you don't ever want to pin it on one player.
Yeah.
But it was just those turnovers. It just killed that. You needed just a little bit better, and you'd win the game from that position. You didn't get it. You got a rebound, and, you know, go see what B-Flow and Minnesota's got for you.
Yeah.
Anyway, and overall, a little bit more from this offense overall. Here's Zach Robinson on situational football. That is what he feels is stopping them.
We're going to continue to just do the best we can because, really, that's – situational football, third down and red zone, and taking care of the ball is where we're kind of stopping ourselves. We're able to move the football very efficiently first and second down. It's just making sure that we are on the screws with situational football, third down, red zone, scoring points when we get down there, scoring touchdowns when we get down there, making sure that that does not happen again.
Yeah, it's so true. I say it all the time. I hope a lot of times that this, and I said it during the game on Sunday, I hope this Falcons team can somehow score from like the 25, because it seems like when they get in the red area or they get into some kind of short yardage situation, we've mentioned before, the Falcons are one of, if not the most successful team on the ground on first and second down in the NFL. Extremely good when it comes to just middle of the field, first down, second down, running the ball. They are elite in that category. Start getting a tighter red area. You start getting into short yardage plays. You start getting into third and longs. All those situational things that Zach is talking about, that's what kills you. You have to stay, and that's why we've talked so much, guys, on this show about penalties and staying on time and not backing yourself up and not being in a first and 20 or a first and 15. Because to Zach's point, once you start getting situational football that is not in your favor, you have simply not been very good, and it's frustrating.
Going into the Denver game, you were 15th in the league in red zone efficiency. 15th in the league down in the red area in efficiency. You're now 25th.
Yeah.
I mean, and at 50% of the time you're in the red area, you don't score a touchdown.
It's just and I had a question from Chris Goforth in between pre and post on Sunday, and he's like, you know, you talk a lot about the run game, and obviously the run game is always going to be the area that I focus on. It's what I love to talk about. It's what I think delivers championships more times than not.
Of course, you're an offensive lineman.
Right. That's what I like to talk about. All right. And he's like, why do you focus so much on the fact that they run wide zone when they're obviously very, very good at running wide zone? Why do you focus so much on the fact that they don't use pullers or run power or run, you know, some of these other run, you know, run plays that the rest of the NFL does? And my answer always is because I think there's more. I think it's one thing to be successful on first and second down. You love that. But I also look at how little long distance explosives we've had this year. We've had one run that's been over like 40 yards this year. And you did get a little bit of a change up last weekend. You went to a wham play. That was nice. Could have gone for more. But I just think the pieces we have in place, I think we should be getting more from the run game. I think there should be 20 and 25-yard chunks sitting in there the way some of these other teams are able to rattle it off and to put yourself in a better situation where you don't have to worry about red zone efficiency.
Do you think they're going to have to do a little bit more wham, maybe a little more mid to inside zone, maybe duo or something? Because here's the thing, and I'm talking about this week alone, because this is the fifth best – actually, excuse me, they're the fifth best scoring defense. They lead the league against the run. They're only giving up 81 yards a game.
Yeah. This is an opportunistic defense and a defense that's been good in that area that you just mentioned.
I think everything's on the table. And I thought they would and it was nice to see the wham play. They also did a little bit of a different – we used to call it mid-zone lock, where instead of the backside tackle coming down into the B-gap, he would actually lock on the backside in and you would insert like a Charlie Warner for the cutback. They tried to do a little bit of that with Algier in the game. It looked like the hole kind of got messy. Algier didn't read it for whatever reason. So there were small changes. But I think Zach Robinson at this point, I think a lot of this run game is Dwayne Ledford. And I think Zach Robinson is kind of opting to let Dwayne Ledford lead that, if I had to guess, because it's got his fingerprints all over it. And they're just, I don't know, it seems like the small caveats that you would normally see kind of moving as a snail's pace. Because, like I said, you look at it and they are extremely efficient on first and second down in the run game at this point. It just, when you get in a situational football, like he said, it's not quite where you want it to be.
No, it hasn't been. And we talked about it throughout the week. Again, I say it again, the opportunistic defense that they are facing with turnovers, with Byron Murphy on their team looking around, it's a game in which you cannot afford to turn the football over at all because this team can capitalize
on
it.
What was, you might remember this. Remember Danielle Hunter and Jonathan Grenard kind of switched places this past offseason. We were monitoring the pass rush market. Danielle Hunter was one of those guys that I think he got, 2 years? $49 million or something like that.
Like fully guaranteed or right. almost like $1 million. Yeah.
The Falcons were kind of in on that a little bit, but it got outbid. Then Jonathan Grenard, who was with Houston, he ends up back where Danielle Hunter was, and they kind of switched places. Man, he's been worth every dime that they're giving him up in Minnesota.
He's a Hiram kid. He went to Hiram High School. He obviously went to Louisville, then went to Florida. And he signed a contract worth $76 million over 4 years. Mm. And to your point, guys got 10 sacks, 14 tackles for loss,
Jesse.
3 forced fumbles, 15 quarterback hits, and a couple of pass breakups.
Woo,
he's had an all-pro year.
So he's got the whole Falcons defense before last week. That was the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, Rook has 3 sacks. I'm not Rook, I'm sorry. Abicati.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of all-pro, we have a life of squid.
Oh, no, you did not. No, you did. That is
coming up next. That's why I laughed. I wanted to make him feel, you know, good.
That's right, Tiff. He might be the All-American. I'm the All-Pro. I did a freeing exercise, and you can do it too. I'll tell you what it is next. Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 19 on the game, and
the Odyssey app. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com for a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing.
Yes!
We're back here on the morning shift.
That's one of those moments we didn't have a plan. Just admit it. We didn't have a plan before
no
Life
plan.
Is Squid.
You don't
talking
have
about
to have one.
How much you love crepes.
Well,
Mike did a diva moment. Mike just had a diva moment.
Mike did have a diva moment.
Unbelievable.
Big
unbelievable.
Time diva
See,
moment.
According to you guys, I'm sensitive.
See,
I'm a diva.
You
I'm
are.
You like to brand me as diva. No, Mike had a diva moment. Big
diva.
You're like, Day-Day, my thirst needs to be quenched. Can
that's
I please
not
get
what
this water? And Day-Day just took off, and all of a sudden he magically appears with water for you.
Rusty said, can somebody walk me down to the 8th floor to get some water? And I was like, hey, Day-Day, if you're going to walk him down there, can I have some water? And there it is.
You know? I don't believe you.
Yeah. Okay. No. Anyway,
you guys hear about reusing your plastic bottles?
No.
I'm full of a wealth of health
I thought that
today.
Was only bad if it sat in the
they
sun.
They said more than one day. No. Apparently.
What if it's the green top?
It's like the germs on it.
What if it's the green top?
But I think it's probably the same as like a metal bottle.
What if you don't drink out of the bottle? You just pour it into another bottle. You use the bottle to store it, and you pour it into another bottle.
Still contaminated.
Is it?
No, it's not.
I don't know. You had all the answers coming into this.
I don't know. I just, for that, I don't know the answer to that one, though, if you're not actually putting your lips on it and reusing it. But
I reuse my gallon a lot. I mean, I do eventually switch it out, but I refill my gallon
jug.
Do
you put your lips on
the
thing?
Yeah, I do, and I'm just fine.
Well, nice knowing you. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I would say once a week we come in here and have a conversation of what's going to kill us.
We do.
Yeah, it's like it, and it it's going to be something.
That what happens when you get old.
It's normally started by one person.
I already said that I am a word I cannot use on this show. I already admitted that. I'm not like doom and gloom, though, but I am a jerk, like a jerk. The bad word for jerk. Yeah.
That's me. Yeah. No, you're, yeah, well.
That's me. I mean, it's true. I own it.
Pat, this is much like Day-Day's conversation about the rappers yesterday. I am not going to comment.
You know what?
You think you'll be in a lose-lose?
There's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go.
Allow me to rescue yourself from
myself.
Yourself. Jeff, I'm not a player. I just crush a lot.
No.
Yep. KSU introduced a new coach, Coach Mack. Got new realm, a little Al N lager. Don't forget my friends at W Sauce, the Bloody Mary mix. It's Garrett Chapman approved and tested.
Mm.
I did, boo.
Oh, get me out of here.
Nylon's on fire today, man. Nylon's on fire today.
I've given him a lot of good material today.
Yeah.
All right. First off, we're going to play the cut from that we talked about from a Hard Knocks in season in the AFC North, which is pretty cool.
It started last night?
No, it started Tuesday.
I watched it yesterday
when I got home. It was phenomenal. It was really good because not all one team, and it's the
AFC North.
Yeah, AFC North, and so it's got Steelers, Ravens, Bengals, and such. It was phenomenal, very good. Before I get to that, I looked at my phone the other day, and I had my Gmail has two accounts. My Gmail app on my iPhone has two accounts linked: my personal and work. I had like 8,000 or 9,000 unopened emails. The little icon said.
I'm sorry, did you say 8,000 or 9,000?
Yeah, not that bad.
I've had like close to 30,000.
I'm at 13-ish.
So,
what is wrong with you?
I started looking at it the other day, and it's been one of those things that bothers you, but you just ignore it. And so.
Like that's a problem for future Bo. Like,
yeah.
Put that one
in
the back
future
pocket.
Bo's put it off apparently since 2017. I think I had emails going back open on the work account. And a lot of them aren't. They're emails that I probably looked at, but never.
The monthly blast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I went through, and as I started clicking, and click the tab, mark is red. Click the tab, mark is red. And I did it, and it probably took me about an hour and a half total time. But I have successfully marked red.
You've cleansed your email.
And I'm going to tell you something. I feel so accomplished. I feel freed. It's almost like a weight has been lifted from my shoulders.
Yeah. You're going to be walking around. Yeah. You're going to be feeling you get the chest poked out when you're walking around today.
And you can too. You too can do that, Tiffany. You can go through there.
I'm at 3 now. I cleared it out from like 24,000 to 30,000 range. And now I'm at 3,500 currently.
I've got won't like, take you
between
long
all three of my accounts.
I've got like 6 Gmails attached to my account from all jobs I've had, all kinds of stuff. And I don't think I've ever got, if I get over 30, I would sweat. If I got over 30,
but this is
I
would on par
sweat.
For all, this is on brand for you. It's on brand for me. It's on brand for both.
Yeah. Nothing can be argued there.
Yeah, because I'm kind of in the middle of both y'all. You're extreme on things. You're extreme on other things. I'm in the middle. I'm the even-keeled guy on this show. I'm the one that breaks it all, puts it all together.
Sure, man. You're even-keel on everything other than self-awareness, which I can dial deliver to you.
I've got plenty of self-awareness.
Nothing there right now.
See, and I'll say where he lacks self-awareness, I'm self-aware, but I don't do anything to stop what I'm doing.
That is very self-aware of you.
Trying to think my way through that one right now.
I know I'm doing it, but I don't try to stop it.
It's Mike. It is spot on. She's right. Don't think through it. I thought through it already. She's spot
you're
on.
Right. You're right.
All right.
I'm definitely an overthinker, so now I'm on brand.
We talked about Deontay Johnson earlier, and I told you guys that Mike Tomlin is definitely the diva wide receiver whisperer. Okay.
All right.
And he's a guy that relates to players, and he holds players clearly respect him, and you can see it. This is the clip I was talking about earlier in the NFL huddle or whatever the name of that segment is for us. It's every show's got a different name, same segment. The reality is that he had to get George Pickens calm after the first play. Here's how it played out.
Huge play on the opening defensive possession for Cincinnati.
Pass interference all day.
You see Cam Taylor-Britt, who struggled recently, but on that play, he gets physical with George Pickens early. Pickens goes to the ground.
The football wasn't out yet, but I think it's illegal use of hands on the defense.
Hey, bro, it came to find us today. I need you to stay with me. Hey, this ain't going to decide the outcome of the game. It ain't going to decide the outcome of the game. Look at me. You all right?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's go.
And George, next possession, George Pickens catches a little screen at the on the Cincy like 21. He houses it, and Tomlin came up as he's coming up. Tomlin says, "See, it's a way to respond. That's a way to respond." I'm not a huge fan of George Pickens. I think he is immature, and I think he pitches temper tantrums, and he's ridiculous. However, he is a very good talent, and he's a good player when his head's in the game, and that is. That is a masterclass of coaching by Mike Tomlin to understand, be aware of the situation, react, pull the guy back in, and get the best out of the guys that you need in those moments. And that's why that team is rolling right now.
When you hear the term leader of men, that is what it sounds like. If you've never been involved in a situation like that and you hear the term leader of men, you can think of that clip because that's exactly what it is.
Well said. All right. When we come back here, we'll find out what's coming up on a very special edition of The Steakhouse.
Woo!
We'll be right back on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.